Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should.
Folks, welcome back to Guitar Radio Show. The first time I heard our next guest was on his 2002 Favored Nations release, Every Step of the Way, and I was captured by the cascading arpeggios and crystalline harmonics of the track Grand Canyon. It made me feel like I was there. That's kind of what his music does. It transports you. He has performed in more than 30 countries and has shared the stage with the likes of Tommy Emmanuel, Leo Kottke, the great Sergio Assad, Larry Carlton, and Eric Johnson from here in Austin. Just to name a few, he was voted Best Acoustic Guitarist by Acoustic Guitar Magazine, Guitar Player Magazine, and countless other publications. And I love his perspective on those accolades, which we are going to discuss in this interview, because every musician should subscribe to his thought process. He has two amazing and insightful True Fire courses at truefire.com called Acoustic Poetica and Acoustic Poetica Fingerstyle Etudes, and he has his own signature model from Canada's Seagull Guitars, and that's just scratching the surface, people. He has a new release that is absolutely beautiful called Connexion with an X, and he's here to talk about that and much more. Please, folks, welcome to Guitar Radio Show, Peppino D'Agostino. How are you, sir? How are you?
I'm good, Mark. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. This record, man, I got to tell you, is just lovely. I've been spending so much time with it and just letting it kind of wash over me. It's sort of like this beautiful musical bath, if you will.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
It really is lovely, and I wanted to talk to you about some of the tracks. But before we do that, I once heard you say about, I think it was 2007, was it? You were, or 2008, you were called the world's greatest acoustic guitar player. And you said, no, I don't believe that, because there are so many other great acoustic guitar players. So you didn't believe it. And you felt that there was, because there's always some place to go, and there's always some way to be better at what you do. And to buy into that type of thought process would basically keep you from getting better. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, when I got the news, actually I was in Paris when I got the news. And from my manager at the time. And of course, you know, it was a good news, you know, from a promotional standpoint. You know, these are the things that, you know, you use in your PR when you try to approach, you know, like a new venue, like a theater. You know, your agents can use these quotes, and it's obviously impressive. You know, if you win a Grammy, that's another impressive thing for a musician. If you play Carnegie Hall, all these things are, you know, milestones. That, of course, it was wonderful. You know, I was very happy about that. But to me, it's like, you know, I accepted that, and it was good, and I'm grateful, and I'm very grateful to a guitar player for having done that. But what is the reality, really? You know, how can you really say that, you know, this is the best guitarist in the world? First of all, you know, the guitar is such a, you know, it's such a complex instrument. It's so versatile. Mm-hmm. I mean, you find guitars everywhere in the world, right? Yeah. From Africa to, I don't know, to Europe, to the U.S., South America, China. And the world is so big. How many of us? 7 billion, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, really, it's a question of, I think, being visible for so many years. You know, people hear the name, my name, Peppino D'Agostino, you know, it's that. It's kind of a longevity in the business, mm-hmm. trying to hang in there and do, for me, really, one thing that I really want to tell you is that I never compromise my music. I just write my own music without having marketing goals. You know, I want to sell more records. I want to, you know, of course, I like that. You have that idea. But when I write a piece, it's just a labor of my mind with the only goal to put it out. There's no other goals. So for me, I can tell you that I don't compromise in that sense. And going back to the best guitarist in the world, how can really anybody say I'm the best guitarist in the world? I mean, to me, it's like, my God, you start believing in your own PR. That's the beginning of the end. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that people should accept, you know, awards like that, but, you know, keeping things in perspective. I was happy. I've done a lot of things. I love the guitar, and it was a good thing to have on my belt, but I do not believe I'm the best guitarist in the world. I didn't believe it then, and I will never believe it, you know, now. You know, there's so many styles of music and so many incredible players out there. And I'll tell you what, Mark, sometimes the best players are, you know, completely unknown because they don't have promotional skills, they don't have managers, agents. So, bottom line, I'm really happy. I got that in 2008, I even forgot, 2008, I think. But I keep things in perspective.
Well, yeah, and that's what I love about that. I love that mentality around that, because it allows you to be to not be taken in by the white noise of what that could be, and allows you to just continue to grow as an artist. You know, I have known artists in my past when I was playing professionally on a full-time basis. I knew artists who were believing their own press releases. And often enough, that was career killers, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think the main thing for artists should be to keep your art in mind. I mean, really, if you're a painter, if you are a sculptor, it's like trying to serve your art. I'm almost looking at that like the ancient Greeks, like the muse. You know, mm-hmm. You are a servant of something bigger than you.
Right. Yeah.
And somehow, you know, somehow we have this gift for whatever reason, or this passion, and you just have to cultivate that passion in order to serve a higher purpose, which is creating beauty, really, in this world that is so sometimes so tragically cold. You know, we as artists, we bring comfort, mm-hmm. and we bring peace, and that's the main thing. It's not, you know, how many million people are following you. Because if you please one person, I'm thinking about now with this pandemic situation that we have, you know. If my music brings a little bit of solace in somebody's life, mm-hmm. I'm already really, really happy and successful in my mind, mm-hmm. you know, because my goal is that music serves a higher purpose than just numbers and glamour and all of that.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, the best guitarists I ever met, they're all a little bit like this, you know. Best, a little bit like, you know, they kind of laugh at these awards and stuff. I mean, they understand that it's better than, you know, they understand the real thing, you know.
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's so perfect that you would say that, you know, we're meant to create beauty. We're meant to create something that somebody can either hear or look at or even touch, or the greatest chefs in the world, or taste, where it brings us solace, it brings us a sense of peace, like you were saying. That is, to me, that's the essence. When I write something, even if I'm writing for somebody who needs it, because I do a lot of music for independent film and TV, and when I do stuff like that, I'm often, you know, I know you have as well, I often, as I'm doing it, I'm asking the person who's asking the music for me, is, well, what do you want, what do you want it to feel like for you, because this is your creation and I'm here to enhance your creation. So yeah, that you know, that type of thing is really, really resonates with me. And you know, and it's funny too, because this record has really resonated with me in so many different ways. And it's great, like I said earlier in the intro, you know, your music takes me places, and it's not just because of the titles, it's because of the music itself. You know, when I heard the first time I heard Beauty in the Abyss, which is the track, it's the piece that closes the record, it seems so hopeful. Was that your intent?
Well, yeah, there's actually, you mentioned, you know, movie soundtrack, that you do that. And you know that's wonderful, by the way, Mark. It's great to connect images and music. I'm sure your work is really excellent. And they gave me this commission. They commissioned me to create the soundtrack of a actually a documentary for the Monterey Bay Aquarium in California, and which is a beautiful place. So I wrote this piece because in the movie there's it's basically the story of brown pelicans, gray whales, and sea lions migrating from the north to the south. And so they follow these three species. And that segment, that song, Beauty and the Abyss, I was looking at the segment related to the whales. You know, they go in deep waters.
Oh, wow.
So there were beautiful images of them. And so is that actually the beauty of these creatures in the abyss? When people think, you know, the abyss, my God, it's scary. But then you have a creature like that is so majestic, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and so that it's almost like the dichotomy, the separation of the, you know, the abyss as a scary place, and then the beauty that lives in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so that was that's the reason behind that title.
That makes it even more special to me now.
Oh.
That's really great. Yeah, that song really, I mean, that piece is just so beautiful, and it resonated with me so deeply. I love it.
Thank you.
I'm going to jump around the record a little bit. I hope you don't mind. There's a track, and being from Texas, this kind of hit home for me. It's a track called Mexican Sunrises. It has this melancholy feeling to it, but positive at the same time. Tell me about that track.
Mm-hmm. I've been to Mexico for concerts and also just for vacation with my family. And I don't know if you had the same feeling when you know Mexico.
Yeah.
Been there?
Yeah.
You probably noticed that when you get there, the rhythm, the life rhythm goes, you know, immediately goes from frantic to slow. A little bit like when you go to Italy, you know, it's kind of a...
Yeah.
Instead of going, 180 per minute, it goes down to 60.
Yeah.
You just, you know, walk slower walks. You just look around.
Yeah.
It takes 2 or 3 days to adjust to that, just like in Italy when I'm in Italy. But so there's that, you know. So the piece is quite, you know, not very fast, and the melody, you know, wanted to be kind of a little bit like Mexican, you know, being there with a with a glass of maybe having something nice to drink in front of the sunset as you enjoy some Mexican food and you slow down and start enjoying that rhythm, that life rhythm in Mexico. So that I think that's how that happened, you know. And it's a simple melody, and I like that rhythm too, you know, the rhythm that I use on that song.
Absolutely, yeah.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
So it was nice to come up with that tune.
Yeah, I'm such a huge fan of Tejano music, and, you know, it's just those rhythms. Waltz-like rhythms too that are just so, like you said, it takes your heartbeat down a little bit as far as rhythm and puts you in a different perspective for sure. I heard you once say that once an album is recorded, you spend a lot of time rehearsing the new material after it's been recorded for a tour. Is that many of the pieces you're recording are so spontaneous in the studio?
No. My previous album was recorded in 2014. So, for 6 years, I've been busy doing different things, but also writing new songs. And I usually which is great to have this technology now with, you know, with a phone, a smartphone, you can record yourself little segments and embryonic ideas and then slowly develop them. So when I went to the studio, all the pieces were already, you know, in my hands, in my brain. I memorized that. I started playing them live. But, you know, the whole album was recorded in, I think, two recording sessions, basically, two days.
Wow.
You know, it was pretty fast. I also worked with a great sound engineer, Masaki Liu, here in the town where I live. Is really, you know, this, you know, I'm sure that you also... you want to work with good people, and you know, when you work with a good sound engineer, like I've been doing many records with him, he really almost reads my mind. He knows when I play poorly, and he says to me, "Hey, are you okay with that passage?" Sometimes he doesn't say anything, and I just keep running the tape, and I just keep recording, you know, and then we cut and paste. But it was, I think, 2 days. Yeah, in 2 days I recorded that album, and all the music, you know, was already kind of in my hands, you know.
So it was basically written before you went in.
It was written before I went in. Yeah, there was... a piece which was kind of improvised, but that's a kind of a crazy piece.
I know which
kind
one.
Of a, you know what I'm talking about.
I do. I love this song. I love it. It's such a great piece.
Yeah, that was kind of a, I said, I want to do something that is not melodic. I want to do something that capture a moment of maybe craziness and fast runs and, you know, crazy stuff with no melody, but kind of then if you listen to that, then you realize, you know, oh, there's something there, there's kind of a little bit of a structure, but I want to kind of break whatever, you know, because my way of writing is that I sit down, I get inspired, or I just push myself because I have to write something because of a, you know, work commission, and I have to write. But in that case, for that song, it's called Head Case.
That's so great.
I really wanted to do something really different from what I've ever done before, which was really go there and record something completely in the moment and go crazy and show off a little bit of technique, but also mainly my intention was, okay, out of chaos, you know, maybe the dance of creativity, you know. Sometimes we have to be crazy, and then we come up with an embryonic idea that then it developed, right, to something. Mm-hmm. Here, it was just chaos, and I wanted to stay there without going to any organized music form at all. And so it's something that I've heard comments. Somebody said, wow, that's my favorite piece.
Yeah.
That's my favorite piece. You write this melodic stuff, man, all the time. But that's different. You broke the rule. Great, great. Good for you. I said, wow. And somebody else said, my God, that's horrible. That's fine. I got a great, you know, review on one magazine that I won't mention. It's one of the most important magazines. But then the journalist said, everything is really good except that piece. That's fine. You can't please anybody. And I was not going to. I just decided I'll put it there.
Right.
Who cares?
Right. I thought it was great because it was like, oh wow, that's such a great left turn, and it's like reckless abandon. You call it chaos. I called it reckless abandon and humor.
Yeah, there's some humor in there.
There's definitely humor in there. You can hear the humor. I totally understood what you were doing.
Thank you, Mark. Well, you're one of the few.
Maybe it's because we're Italian. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, there's the creativity, you know, that crazy creativity that we have. Yeah.
I thought it was great. It made me wonder, have you ever, I mean, I know you've like we said earlier in the introduction, you've been around and you've toured with and shared the stage with the likes of some pretty heavyweights like yourself. Has there been anybody that you haven't played with yet that you'd like to?
Well, yes, you know, there's many people that I admire, but I don't know if I can sit with them. I mean, they're so good, you know. I would like to, you know, to have a chat, you know, and maybe accompany John McLaughlin, you know, as he improvised.
Yeah.
I would have loved to sit with Alan Allsworth and just sit there and listen to him play.
They would both like Headcase. If Alan was alive, he would love Headcase, and I know McLaughlin would love Headcase.
Have you met them? Do you know them?
I met Alan many, 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 many years ago. Back in the late 70s, early 80s, I met Alan. And very, very nice person. Never met McLaughlin, though.
Mm-hmm.
But, they would like that track. They would like that track.
Okay, well, maybe I'll find a way to send it to John.
Yeah.
Other people, you know, there's so many guitarists that I like, you know, Yamandu Costa from Brazil is phenomenal. But, you know, these people play a style that is very different from mine. So I play a little bit of Chorinha Brasileiro, you know, I play some of that. But these people are at an amazing level. But just sitting down and just closely look at what they do and ask some questions. I don't think I can play with the people that I really admire. Like, I love Vicente Amigo, as far as flamenco, I consider him and Tomatito the people that are now at the top of the flamenco style after Paco de Lucia died.
Mm-hmm.
See, I would love to just sit down with them and just talk to them and maybe ask them, can you show me the Rascado, how you do it? Maybe, but I don't want to take that time, you know. I would be a little bit, I would be very sensitive about their time, but I don't think I can play with them. I will enjoy just sitting with them, and you know, maybe they will enjoy some of my stuff because our styles are so different, and that's the beauty, you know, when you meet great guitarists, it's like, you know, they're all very curious, you know, very curious about the acoustic guitar, you know, and even God, the guitar God, you know.
I love when two musicians from very different worlds get together and do something, because the possibilities for creation are just never ending. I mean, it could be the onion we peel forever, you know. Like, I would love to see you with Ralph Towner.
God, that's another genius, you know, that his production with ECM and Oregon in the 70s, his first solo record, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
See, because he's not only, you know, a great, technically speaking, he does pretty amazing stuff, but it's mainly, I think, is the way he writes music that makes him so unique, and that's the main thing that people should aspire to, to create, to be themselves in a way that is different from anyone else. And definitely Ralph Towner is one of them.
Yeah, for sure. Let's get back to the record. There's two tracks that feature Steph Burns on electric guitar. Mara's Sleeping Song and Stami Vicino. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah. I am very proud of you.
Thank you very much. My mother would be pleased. So you're melding the acoustic and electric worlds and beautifully. Was this a collaboration, or did you already have an idea of what you wanted prior from him?
Well, the Stami Vicino, actually, it's a piece that originally started with an idea that I had while visiting. I was touring Ireland, and I had this idea, and then I recorded that piece on one record. Actually, it was a sampler record. And then that idea, I played that for Steph. We're good friends, you know. We live in the same town. Now he lives in Italy and the U.S. Most of the time, Steph is in Italy. But this was like 2003 or something, or four, 2004, when I played that idea, that piece. And he said that, you know, this, I think if we change here and there, we can come up with a piece that I can present to my boss. Now, Steph Burns is one of the best electric guitarists in the world, in my opinion. And he works mainly in Italy, although he played here with Sheila E., Huey Lewis, and the News. He's truly an amazing guitarist, but also a musician, not only a technician. He's really at the level of Steve Vai, Joe Satriani. He's at that level, no mm-hmm. doubt. Although he's not as well known, simply because mainly he works now in Italy with this big rock star. So he presented this piece. We manipulated the piece, added a chorus, and his boss, his name is Vasco Rossi. He's the biggest selling artist in Italy, rock. I mean, they sell out stadiums, you know, 20 stadiums in a row. You know, it's just amazing. Nobody knows him outside of Italy. But so Steph presented the piece, and Vasco, you know, this piece was sitting there for about 8 years. But then 8 years later, Vasco Rossi said, you know, I think I wrote a lyrics to this piece. And so that became a song called Stammi Vicino. I mean, you can see the video, the official video that they made, and I think it got like 50 million viewers. But the song became a number one song in Italy. And so me and Steph wrote the music, and Vasco wrote the lyrics. And so when we recorded that piece, we recorded an instrumental version of the song. We already knew clearly the song, and I just sent my accompaniment to him, and in Milano he added his the melody and his improvisation. That's the story of that song.
Okay, that's interesting. I want to hear it with the lyrics. That's interesting.
Yeah, just go there. It's Stammi Vicino, S-T-A-M-M-I V-I-C-I-N-O.
Cool.
Stammi Vicino.
Very good. I will.
Vasco Rossi, yeah.
I will check it out. Another track on the record that really just kind of burrowed deep inside me was Jenny's Goodbyes. It's so deep in tone and sadness. It has the musical sadness that the lyric for... You remember the song by the Beatles, She's Leaving Home, from Sgt. Pepper? Do you remember?
If you play for me, I heard it, but I don't remember it.
It's such a sad lyric. It's about a young girl who's leaving home, leaving her parents behind, and her parents are brokenhearted by her leaving, and the feeling that the music gave me. Gave me the same feeling that those lyrics gave me. And because the music for that song isn't really incredibly sad, but the lyrics, I mean, the chorus is sad, absolutely, but this music has such a deep sadness to it. Was there a Jenny that said goodbye?
Yeah, it's kind of I'll make this story short, but I teach every year in France. I have my own guitar workshop where people come from Europe to study with me. And Jenny and Chris were these two English people that I had this kind of farm in France, and they organize workshops. And so, we, you know, they have mainly people from England, you know, and they have, you know, like a saxophone player, teacher, they have a violin, mandolin, and they have guitar. Mm-hmm. So they invite me to teach guitar. So I remember I went there the very first time, maybe 10 years ago, or something like that, maybe eight. And, you know, immediately we became good friends. I became good friends with these two people, Chris and Johnny. And, you know, when you have kind of a simpatico, you know, you just like each other. And I remember this was like in July. And in October, I had a gig in Poland, in Krakow, and for a festival. So I was there, and they knew that I was there, and it was my birthday. It happened to be my birthday when I was invited to play there. So I decided, you know, to just play the gig and be there and celebrate my birthday by myself, you know, on the road. So what they did, they actually, one night, you know, I was there for a week, you know, for this festival. One night I went back to the hotel, and they surprised me with another friend. They all came to Poland to spend my birthday with me. And I was completely shocked. I said, my God, we just met. Well, but, you know, we liked you. So they took a plane to just be with me. And we had a great time. We walked in Krakow, which is a beautiful city. Well, life is cruel sometimes, because a few months later, she actually died suddenly of a very terrible infection that she basically was gone in 2 days. And so it was really sad, and I wrote that piece.
Wow. See, that's the thing about the way you write that I've noticed, is that it is so evident, and not just from the title, but from the music, that there was something there. And you know, I hope you don't mind me asking that question. But it was so evident to me, you know.
Well, that's because you're an artist and you understand. We can tune to that. Mm. See, music, as you can teach me that, I'm sure, is not just a sequence of notes, but it should be the reflection of something bigger.
Yeah.
An emotion, a person that you love. And, you know, one thing that I've done recently, and that maybe can give you an idea, Mark, for your music too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the best thing we can do is really the gifts of giving a song to somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when I gave that Jenny's Goodbye to Chris, you know, a year after Jenny's death, he was in tears, you know, of course. And so what I've done recently, you know, I decided to post just videos of my own songs that I dedicated to people that are important in my life. Mm-hmm. If you go on my Facebook, you can see all of those. I've done about seven, you know, and one also for Sandra Sad, you know, the great classical player.
Mm-hmm.
So I had so much fun making these, and then chatting with, you know, people, you know, like I've done one for my daughter, one for my goddaughter, just for no other reasons than celebrating the people that I love in my life with music. I think it's a good idea for people to do that.
I love that.
You know, to, hey, I'm going to write a song for this guy and give it to him. I mean, you know, or this woman, or this friend, or this aunt, or this uncle, or, you know, you have no idea how powerful of a gift is that.
I love that. I do. That's great. the thing that I also notice about the record is the sequencing of the record. When you record, often enough when you're recording a record, you're not initially thinking about the sequencing. At least most people aren't. What is the sequencing like for you? Because for me, for you to start the record with High Plains guitar, and then ending with Beauty in the Abyss, it was like, you know, everything in between fell in perfectly like dominoes. What is it like for you sequencing a record?
Well, you have to look at different things, like the rhythm. You know, you don't want to put two or four pieces that are slow, because otherwise you want to alternate kind of a little bit fast tempos. Also, the tonality, you know, you want to alternate, you know, if possible, different keys, you know. So that's also, you know, the length of the songs. So there's different elements that, you know, I kept in mind when I was sequencing this. But I also got help from Masaki Liu, with my sound engineer, gave me some ideas. Also my wife. Mm-hmm. So also sometimes you want to put the most, maybe something that is more, you know, effective, maybe more rhythmical in the beginning. Like, I think I play guitar, it's kind of this flamenco kind of, mm-hmm. I thought that, okay, this one, I'll start with that. And then ending with Beauty in the Abyss, which is kind of a very slow, kind of reflecting in my mind, you know, the ocean, in the deep ocean, mm-hmm. slow, where everything goes to a, you know, an alt, you know, it's just, it's very slow for that reason. I thought it was a good way to end mm-hmm. my album.
Yeah, it really is a powerful record. I really love it. I really do.
Thank you, Mark.
Let's talk about the True Fire things that you've been doing, the Acoustic Poetica and Acoustic Poetica Fingerstyle Etudes. How did you get set up with them? I've had so many people on the show who do True Fire courses, and I have to say, they're such a great company, and they really deliver really high quality stuff.
My connection with Brad Wenkos and, you know, Ali Hasbeck, you know, True Fire, Tommy Jamming, Jeff Sheets, these people, that happened because, I'll tell you how that happened. One of my friend and colleague, guitarist, is a wonderful player. Her name is Mimi Fox.
Oh, yeah.
She's a great bebop jazz guitarist.
Yeah.
And she lives a few miles from where I live here in California. And we always had a great time together, you know. We always have fun, you know. When we get together, and I admire her work. So, you know, one point she said, Pepino, I know that you've done this record for Steve Vai, that was 2002, can you make an introduction? And I said, of course, yeah. So I made the introduction, and actually they became very, you know, they like each other, and she ended up making two or three records for them, mm-hmm. For Steve Vai. And then, you know, what she said to me one day, she said, Pepino, I thank you for that. I said, you know, what has to happen, it will happen. I mean, but I'm glad I made that introduction, no problem. She said, well, I want to reciprocate. There's this company in Florida, and I think you will do well with them. They're very nice. I said, okay, well, good. So she made the introduction for me, and that's how that relationship started.
Mm. And so you did two of these. How do they differ from each other? Because I've only seen introduction tapes of those.
Okay, so the Brad Wenkos, the CEO of the company, he was familiar with my music, because he was involved with also guitar player many years ago before Street Fire, and he was always doing it. You remember the floppy 33 inside guitar player?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So
yeah.
he was involved with that, you know. And so he... said to me, Pepino, let's do what you want to do. We don't want to, it's not like we want to teach the pentatonic scale. We want to do something about your music and your approach to music. So basically, he gave me carte blanche and said, Pepino, do what you want. And I said, okay, I'll record four of my songs and explain it in details, you know. I said, okay. And that was it. And he said, but what about the title, Pepino? I don't know. And he came up with Acoustic Poetica. He actually came up with that title. And so that was the first project, which is kind of a intermediate to advanced, mm-hmm. because some of the techniques are a little bit complex for beginners. But then we decided to do one that was for beginners. And basically, he said, Pepino, why don't we do something for beginners to intermediate? And I decided to write basically 10 etudes. And each etude basically is concentrating on an aspect, on a technical aspect of the guitar, for mm-hmm. instance, the slide mm-hmm. techniques, or harmonics, or the bending, or the percussions. But every etude only is within a page. So the etude is no longer than one page. So I wanted to keep it short and effective. So it was difficult to create those etudes. But I'm getting, you know, great comments, I have to say. And you know, I'm pleased with that because, let's face it, the majority of students are beginners.
Yeah,
you know, very, very few people will approach very difficult, I mean, tutorial CDs, DVDs, or downloads. So I'm happy I did that one, and this was like Brad Wankos' idea, you know, let's do that. And I may do another one, you know, maybe beginner to intermediate or something like that.
Right.
So, and it's a great company, really. I don't know if you ever worked with them, but I highly recommend them.
Oh, yeah.
They're great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Great stuff. It's really, really good. I mean, and it gets you, it's always good to hear somebody else explain something that maybe you have maybe you know or you've learned, but when you hear somebody else explain something, you start to think of it in a different context. And it starts to get you to, yeah, I like to call it basket weaving. You start to weave it into your own basket. Do you know what I mean?
yeah, that is true. Also, I mean, I don't know many teachers, but it's like huge. Their library is huge, and they have so many followers, and it's a great company.
Yeah,
and they're nice people. In fact, right now, with this, everybody trying to go online and teach online, they've been so helpful to us. The other day I was on a conference call with them, and Robin Ford was part of the conference, and Frank Vignola and other great players. And so we were all listening to them explaining, you know, how to really create your own channel, which is something that I'm going to do, give online lessons. So it's great to be supported by such a great company.
That is great. Yeah. Speaking of great companies, you have been with Siegel Guitars for quite a while, and you were really the guy who designed your signature guitar. Is that not true?
Yes, Mark. I met Robert Godin. It was probably 1994, I believe. I was introduced to him by Lloyd Baggs, L.R. Baggs, which is a company that makes electronic pickup system for acoustic guitars. Lloyd is a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, Pepino, I'd like to introduce you to this Canadian guy. So at that point, Godin didn't even have a booth at the NAMM show, but they rented an hotel, and they rented actually a room on the second floor of a restaurant, and he had all his guitars there, and every night they had the Godin nights where people knew that was happening there after the NAMM show was closing down at 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So the music went on and on you know, from 7 till, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I remember that I met Roberto then in that room, and he's, you know, I started talking, you know, he has obviously, you know, a Quebecois French accent, and I have my own Italian accent, but we managed to understand each other. We drank a beer, and he said, Peppino, try this guitar. And I, and this was like an acoustic caster. It was an electric guitar, but designed in a very unique way. So I said, wow, what an incredible design is this? And he said, looked at me, how much you're playing? I said, thank you. I said, now, take this guitar at home with you. Play it. And I said, wow, my God, what a nice thing to do. So thank you. And so I, our relationship started that way. And then, you know, I think 5 or 6 years later, you know, I started doing, almost immediately, actually, I started doing clinics for them. So they sent me on the road. I was playing in music stores, their guitars, and it was fun, like all over Europe. And then what happened is that Robert said, hey, look, we want to build a guitar under with your, you know, design and your suggestions. And I said, oh my God, that's fantastic. And so that's how we started. And I gave them my suggestions. And then as far as the wood, the width of the neck, and, you know, they built like, I think like 6 or 7 prototypes. And then finally we arrived to the design that I wanted. And, you know, the basic thing, I said, look, you know, there's so many great guitar factories out there, and, you know, we all know the most important ones. And those guitars, they can be, you know, anything from $5,000 to, you know, $200,000. So I said, look, if we make a guitar, I want this guitar to be an inexpensive guitar with high quality wood, solid top, and all these things, solid size and back. And I want the guitar not too expensive, so actually guitarists can play, you know, professional can play this instrument, not collectors of guitars, with the guitars, mm-hmm. you know, ended up in a closet. So, and he said, okay, they were able to do it because, you know, the spruce, you know, actually grows there in Canada, so they don't have to import some of the woods. So they were able to achieve what I wanted. The guitar won different awards, and so I'm very pleased. And now they came up with a new revised signature model, and I'm very happy with it. With the pickup system is again Lloyd Baggs, my dear friend. So it's, mm-hmm. It's a really nice instrument for me.
It's a beautiful instrument. I noticed that the headstock is very in line with the way the strings travel from the bridge across the neck, and there isn't a lot of mm-hmm. there's not a lot of break at the nut.
Mm-hmm.
What,
right.
Was that
That's
part?
Exactly what I wanted.
Yeah, that was part of your design, right?
Yeah, that was well. I don't remember now the details of that. Maybe that was Robert's suggestion.
Uh-huh.
But what my main suggestion was to have a neck that was wider. It's almost like a classical guitar neck.
Okay.
As far as the width. And
right.
So that, I know that's my kind of my suggestion to them, and they were able to do it. But all the other details, I can't remember who suggested what, but it was more of a, you know, a team effort where they were coming to me with the prototype, and I said, oh, I like this, oh, I don't like this, change this. So I can't tell you what I suggested. I just, for sure, the neck, it was my idea, the width, yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's a beautiful instrument. I have not played your signature model, but I know I've played Seagulls in the past, and they're lovely instruments. They really are. Really beautiful.
Thanks. I'll let Robert and Simone and Patrick know that.
Tell us about, tell everybody about Music World Retreats.
Well, I was touring with Martin Taylor 7 years ago. It was a tour with him and Frank Vignola and Vinny Raniolo, the four of us. And one day, you know, we had a day break in between gigs. And so I said, Martin, why don't you stay in this, you know, bed and breakfast in my town? And he did, with his wife, Liz. And that night, we had a glass of wine and at their place. And he looked at me and he said, but, you know, I've done clinics, you know, in different parts of the world. Why don't we do one here in Venetia? And I said, yes. And my wife said, yeah, I could, you know, I know people in Venetia. We can get some good discounts and, you know, we can make it affordable. And we did. And Martin Taylor's son, James Taylor, which is a great marketing guy, helped with the promotion of the Martin Taylor guitar retreat. Mm-hmm. And that retreat was the very first one. It was an incredible. It was sold out in 2 minutes, 30 spots. Because it's not, you know, a big, we don't want hundreds of people, but just no more than 30. And at this retreats that we do, and so the first one was sold out in less than 2 minutes, you know, and then we just did that, and then we did another one with him the following year, and then we started thinking, well, why don't we invite other people like mandolin, fiddle, ukulele. You know, violin, maybe classical guitars, etc. And so we ended up actually expanding, and that's how that started. James Taylor and Martin Taylor's son is basically marketing only Martin's workshop, but and now for the other artists that we invite. We do the marketing and we do basically everything else. So we learn a lot of things about, you know, creating a website, dealing with the payments. You know, it's a lot of work, but it's lovely work because you see these students being so happy at the end of 2.5 days of intense study and also great fun, because the idea here is not to just learn the guitar and go home. Here is like, we have dinners together, we hang, we jam together, they can perform a performance at the end. It's a whole thing, and really works really well. And we've done these, not only in California, we expanded also in Europe, essentially Italy. The Amalfi Coast, which is a gorgeous place, mm-hmm. and also Sicily, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful island. So, because, you know, it's not just the learning guitar, but also having an experience of a new place. So a lot of the students were coming from the Galapagos Islands, mm-hmm. from Argentina, from Brazil. They came from all over the world in these workshops because, you know, we live in California. It's a beautiful state, and so for the students that often comes with their wives and or husbands or partner or friends, they also want to have a vacation, you know. Mm-hmm. So it serves different purposes, and you know, people can see this at the Music World Retreats. They you know, we explain everything on that website.
That's great. I love that. You know, I love how open minded and open armed you are. You're open hearted to everything, and that you're, you know, it's not just about, you know, you're not staying in your lane. You know, you're trying everything, and that's what we should be doing as artists. We should be trying everything and sharing everything and showing everybody, hey, you can do this too. You can do this over here, or you can do that. You know, I love that about what you're doing, and I think it's fantastic. It really is.
Thank you, Mark. I think, you know, when you see somebody that you really touch with music, I thought maybe they couldn't play certain things. I'm teaching to this one of my students online as a psychotherapist, and he's so in love with swing music, and he wants to sing, you know, like George on my mind. He wants to sing songs like that, you know, standards. And when we started, he said that, you know, I can never play that accompaniment. I said, no, look, just I'll teach you slowly, you know, make videos for you. I'll explain which fingering you have to use, and you'll do it. And now, you know, now he can play the stuff. And this is a man in his, I think he's 65, 66. And, you know, when we have our lessons, his face is, I mean, his smile is so big because he now can play this stuff. And this is the beauty of teaching and seeing the results. People, you make people happy, and they make me happy because they're happy. Yeah. Everybody's happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. Well, Peppino, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and spending some time with us today. This has been great.
I have to thank you, Mark, and I hope our paths will cross one day. I'm going to visit my daughter, hopefully, when this will be over, this pandemic. And, you know, maybe we'll have a cup of coffee or maybe a slice of pizza. Huh?
Ah, that would be great. Yeah. I know just the place. Ladies and gentlemen, go ahead.
No, that will be good. And, you know, just after this conversation, just text me your last name because I want to check you out.
Okay, you know, I will do that.
Because I have this feeling that I'm going to love your work.
I will send you stuff, absolutely. And later on today, I'll send you a text of the pizza I made. I'll send you a picture.
That will be very good. Thank you, Mark.
Ladies and gentlemen, the record is called Connection, or Connexion with an X. And you can download it anywhere. Folks, please don't stream it. Go buy it, okay? Don't stream. I mean, you can stream, you know, buy it first, then stream it all you want, but buy it first. And folks, you can go to PeppinoDiAgostino.com. It's a beautiful website. There's so much there, so much more there to learn about Peppino and his work. I highly recommend you go check it out. The link will be in the show notes at guitarradioshow.com for those of you who are listening on Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else in the 21 countries that we broadcast to. But folks, please check out this record. It is absolutely lovely. Peppino, thank you again for being on Guitar Radio Show. Thank you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Mark.
Okay, hold on 1 second, but we're going to sign off right here.
Radio Show on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, GuitarRadioShow.com, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Find Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, if you like the artists you hear on Guitar Radio Show, don't just stream their music, buy it.
GRS Productions.